Well, you're all doing quite well with this new translation. I'm very impressed. Since I am mostly concelebrating Mass, I'm mostly in the same position that you are, and I think I'm about 50-50 with and with your spirit. It's mostly turned into the Italian version, and with your spirit. Reflecting on the incarnation and penance has been a little bit of an adventure for me, because I just don't often put those two things together, the incarnation and penance. But what is it without the incarnation? And perhaps to set that a little bit, because we don't want to miss the signs, and that's a little bit of what we heard in the gospel, is that the sign had come and they missed it. Elijah had come in John the Baptist and they missed it. We don't want to miss the signs, because the sign prepares the way for us to meet the Lord. If we're still looking for the sign, then we'll miss the Lord. So we don't want to miss the sign or the Lord, and so we have to be tuned in to what's happening. Without the incarnation, prior to the incarnation, and even without Jewish revelation, there were great men who had tremendously developed reason. And I think of Plato and Socrates and Aristotle, who were great philosophers who were able to use their reason to answer deep questions. And it shows us, in fact, what our reason is capable of without faith. And that's important for us when we're working among people anyway, because even without the gift of faith, we should be asking fundamental questions, exploring who we are and how this world came to be and where we're going. We can already get some answers to those things. We can discern a creator. We can discern a transcendence, even without the gift of divine faith. But Plato, demonstrating his deep philosophical insight and his developed human reason, natural reason, came up with this allegory of a cave. And he described reality as being like people in a cave looking at a wall, and there was light coming from behind them, and that light was hitting sort of things that they couldn't see with their eyes, but they could see the shadow of those things on the wall in front of them. And most people live just looking at the shadows on the wall in front of them, thinking that that's reality, when in fact, the true philosopher who discerns that the light is behind him and the forms that are being projected by shadow onto the wall are the reality. The philosopher turns away from the shadows, a painful turning, to turn into the light when our eyes have become adjusted to the darkness, or at least the dimness. To turn into the light is a very painful turning. To emerge into the light is a painful movement. But then he comes to see reality. And Plato was giving that as an allegory of the noose and the former of all things, the creator, divine forms being real forms, and everything that we're seeing in front of us. Every tree is only a shadow of the real tree, the original form of the tree in heaven, and so we're just dealing with a lot of shadows in front of us. And Plato even developed a sense of the real philosopher having gone into the world of divine forms, having made the painful turning into the light, then is moved by a desire to help his brothers and sisters and to go back into the cave, another painful turning, to then share with them the world of forms that he has come to discern through the action, through the work of philosophy. And so all of that has, we can see immediately, a lot of application. There's a lot of truth there. There are a few things that are false. One is that Plato also saw the emergence from the cave, the ultimate emergence of the cave being, and the cave in itself being in some way the prison of the body. And so the only way we can really emerge into the world of forms is to be freed of the prison of the body, which was a punishment that we received having originated in the world of forms ourselves. We received this punishment of a body because we allowed our passions to be unhinged from our reason. We lost reins of the horses of the passions, and the reins are reason, and we lost control, and then we were plunged into the body as punishment. And now, overcoming the passions and clinging to reason, we are freed from the prison of the body, and we come into the world of forms. So that was his whole conception. And of course, there are a few things that are wrong with that, as we come to realize through Christian revelation. And to describe that a little bit, what happens is that when we understand the incarnation, we can place ourselves again in this cave and looking at this wall of shadows of divine realities being projected into creation. But what we come to discover in the incarnation, in a sense, that God has brought this, has filled this shadow in front of us with divine life. And so rather than turning away from all created realities in order to discover the true reality, we can discover the true reality in the created realities. God has filled these shadows with divine life. And to mix metaphors, it makes me think of Pinocchio. I want to be a real boy. And so this wooden figure is filled with real life, no longer just an image, no longer just a projection, not just a shadow, but we are brought into real life through contact with these forms. Now, all the same, it's still a movement beyond, and that's the insight that Plato was still latching onto correctly, was that the shadows are not it, that there's something beneath that, there's something deeper than that, there's something transcendent. So we don't, in that sense, we don't stop at the human form of the baby in Bethlehem. We don't reject the human form of the baby, we hold the baby close to ourselves. But we realize that in holding the baby, we are holding God. We are holding that divine reality which has placed itself in this human creation, in this human form. So part of the penance that's required in the incarnation is the moving beyond those created realities. And beyond doesn't also mean rejecting and leaving them behind, because we know we believe in the resurrection of the body. God will give us resurrected bodies. That's all a little bit mysterious how that works out and what that looks like. But all the same, we don't ever get beyond having some interaction with the world and gift of ourselves through the bodies. The body will always present a divine reality on earth and in heaven. So we can always ask the question, what does love look like? And it's going to have a visible presentation, but love is not only the visible presentation. We can think of an embrace as an image of love. But love is more than the embrace. It includes the embrace, but it's more than the embrace. So we're always going to have this contact with reality, with divine reality, through tangible presentations. We live in this sacramental world, not a world of shadows, but a world of sacraments, where touching the tangible realities brings us into contact with divine realities. Now, I was also doing a little investigation about penance through my new friend. I don't know if you're familiar. You probably know my friend already. I thought, you know, after 7 years of priesthood, it'd be good to open the catechism. No, it's not really the first time, but I've kind of rediscovered the catechism. It's amazing. I really started to do a little Lectio Divina with the catechism, and it's really beautiful. But to give a little illustration, I want to also draw something here from the catechism. And there's a nice, there are nice paragraphs on penance, which I'm sure you read already at the beginning of your year of penance, but I'm trying to catch up with you. And where is that? Paragraph 1432, the catechism says, "The human heart is heavy and hardened. God must give man a new heart." And to draw on the analogy, the allegory of the cave again a little bit, the heavy and hardened heart is not willing to look beyond the shadows. It's not willing to see the divine reality in the shadow. That's too difficult. We just sort of collapse in the tangible realities of this world. We collapse and we give up at the level of physical pleasure or physical satisfaction or the superficial stimulation of the senses. We just sort of give up at that. That's a heavy heart. We're not willing to look in that, through that, beyond that, to the divine reality that's hidden within, if you will. The human heart is heavy and hardened. God must give man a new heart. Conversion is, first of all, a work of the grace of God who makes our hearts return to him. Restore us to thyself, O Lord, that we may be restored. Or, Lord, make us turn to you. Let us see your face, and we shall be saved. God gives us the strength to begin anew. It is in discovering the greatness of God's love that our heart is shaken by the horror and weight of sin and begins to fear offending God by sin and being separated from him. The human heart is converted by looking upon him whom our sins have pierced. So that's amazing. Incarnation and penance gives us the courage even to look at, because the world of shadows, again, to return to that image, there's a lot of ugliness there. There's a lot of brokenness there. There's a lot of pain there. And we might like to look beyond that to the more perfect world of forms in heaven. We might like to turn away into the light so that we don't have to look at that ugly, broken, sinful presentation before us. But God himself goes into that, and so we can meet him there. That's why we have that beautiful image there. God goes into that so that we can meet him there. We look upon him whom we have pierced. And we can look upon him in ourselves, not rejecting our weakness and powerlessness and helplessness, our poverty and littleness. We find him there. He hasn't scorned that. He lives in that. We find him there. And likewise, in the weakness and powerlessness and helplessness and poverty and littleness of those we serve in the streets, of those that we serve among the sisters. I had the wonderful grace on the Solemnity of the Immaculate Conception 2 days ago. My habit still smells like incense, or my alb still smells like incense. I had a mass for the Benedictine nuns in Greensburg, and then I had mass at the mental hospital. It was just wonderful. From one group of crazies to another. Just great. Jesus was there in his crazy nuns and in his crazy mental patients. Jesus was there. It's beautiful. And we see, not in spite of the brokenness, not fixing all of the brokenness, but right there in the midst of the brokenness, we see him and we love him and we touch him and we embrace him. And also in ourselves, accepting that. Brokenness and poverty, littleness. And in doing that, we begin to take his heart into ourselves. And the Benedictine nuns told me this beautiful story, which has just kept captivating me, a real-life story. Now, unfortunately, I can't remember the names of the people, so I'm just going to make them up. But there was a family who, two parents who were trying very hard to have a baby, and trying and trying and trying for many years, and eventually gave birth to this baby girl. I'm just going to call her Margaret. And beautiful person, grew up beautiful outside, inside, promising future, very faithful, very in love with the Lord, everything, just wonderful. At age 18, well, let me stop there. Another family, their daughter, let's call her Mary. Their daughter, also beautiful, loved her, but from early on had a heart condition, and was always, her life was more and more threatened as she got older, and was waiting for a heart transplant. Margaret got into a car accident and died. This parent's only daughter. And obviously they were grief-stricken. The upside of this was that her heart was intact, and her heart was able to be transplanted into Mary. In the family, the parents, the devastation of the loss of their daughter, it was many years before they could, but the invitation was always there for them to meet Mary, the daughter who had been saved by their own daughter's death. And eventually they had the courage to do this and met her. And there they are, able to feel her pulse, feel the heart of their daughter in the body of this other girl. And the girl said, you know, my pulse was always kind of, but since your daughter's heart is in my body, it's gentle and strong. They could recognize their daughter's heartbeat in the body of this other girl. It's beautiful. This is the great gift for us. In the incarnation, it has become possible for us to really repent because it has become possible for us to have a new heart. God had to become man in order to make a heart that he could give to us, that he could place in our hearts. And the whole work of penance then is to learn to let only his heart beat in us, a heart that is deeply in love with all of creation, especially with every human being, especially with poverty and littleness and weakness, a heart that is in love with the Father, to let only that heart, his sacred heart, beat in us, because he paid a great price to have that heart, and he paid a great price to give that heart to us. So that's why we keep coming back also to the Eucharist in every Mass to receive the very heart of God. And we have to have the courage more and more to let go of our own heart and to allow there to be just one heart beating in us, the heart of Jesus.